You don't have to be a genius to realize that the U.S. economy is in trouble, both at the state and the federal level. Out of all 50 states, Michigan now ranks 50th in most economic criteria. Only in one respect do we lead, and that's unemployment. House prices are also falling faster in the greater Detroit area than in most metropolitan areas around the country. The BBC NewsHour program a couple of days ago was broadcast from Wall Street, and one of the Wall Street bigwigs, I don't know what his name was, I wish I got his name, because I would have liked to have quoted him in an article, but I didn't get his name. But he made this comment. He was asked, what is happening? You know, what is happening around the world? Because this is an international financial crisis. It's not just the U.S. It's happening all over the world. And this Wall Street commentator was asked, you know, what is happening? And he said this. He summed it up this way. He says, for decades, the rest of the world has felt that it cannot live without the United States because Americans are the biggest consumers in the world. Therefore, the rest of the world needs to sell things to America. So they keep on lending us the money to buy things so that people in other countries do not get laid off. So he said, for decades, the rest of the world has felt that it cannot do without the United States. Americans consume more than any other nation. Other countries have loaned us the money to buy their products rather than see their citizens laid off. But now the world realizes it can get along fine without America, and they're not going to be so quick to lend to us anymore. And the result is the credit squeeze, which is only going to worsen, making it harder for people to buy homes or cars or anything else. And we're seeing the effects of this. May get worse. They may bounce back. I don't know. But the thing is, I think we can see that there is a problem which is developing at that time. We're certainly losing our domination of the world economy. When the United States a few weeks ago put pressure on the Chinese to raise the value of their currency, the renminbi, the Chinese retaliated by threatening to dump $1.5 trillion on the world's currency markets, which would have resulted in a collapse of the U.S. currency. That's exactly what would have happened. They have $1.5 trillion in their reserves because we have bought so much from them, but they don't buy much from us. And those dollars are just sitting in their vault somewhere, I don't know where, and, you know, they could just dump them all if they wanted to, and that would result in a crash in the value of the dollar. So our money would become worthless. Now, The Economist magazine, which is the world's leading economic magazine, has pointed out many times that one of the great lessons of history is that eventually all paper money becomes worthless. So eventually it would happen to the euro, the pound, and everything else. But, it certainly was possible that could have happened to the dollar a few weeks ago if the U.S. had not backed off when China retaliated in the way that they did. All of this brings to mind a scripture you can turn to in Deuteronomy 28. And while you turn there, I can just show you the Financial Times a couple of days ago, you know, to show you how international this is. The Europeans battle to quell turmoil. And then page 2 was nothing but the economic crisis. Debate unfolds on likely impact of cut in U.S. interest rates. Subprime fallout will cause significant slowdown. U.S. housing demand at 6-year low. Lots of different articles here. Japanese house builder fears property bubble will burst in Japan. So it's fast becoming a worldwide problem. The Economist magazine yesterday, I got this off the internet this morning, said this. The Economist is the leading international financial magazine. Whatever your opinion of the health of America's economy was a couple of days ago, it should now be a lot gloomier. The monthly jobs figures for August, released on Friday, were worse, far worse than anyone expected. The economy lost 4,000 jobs last month, the first monthly loss of jobs since August 2003. Already jittery financial markets headed down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell almost 250 points, or 1.87%. The dollar sank at the prospect of a weaker economy and lower interest rates. At the end of the article, it says, Unfortunately, it says if the unemployment figures are a harbinger of what is to come, it may already be too late to stave off a nasty slowdown. And summing up the article they've written, which you can look at afterwards if you would like to. But as I said, this brings to mind a scripture in Deuteronomy chapter 28, if you want to turn there. This is the blessings and cursings chapter. I'm preparing an article on this particular chapter. Somebody surprised me a few weeks ago. I spoke on it when I was in Flint for the 40th anniversary. And Mr. Schaefer came up afterwards and told me that George Washington, in his inaugural address, actually opened the Bible. When he swore on the Bible as the first president of the United States, he opened it at Deuteronomy 28 because he knew the significance of this chapter to the future of the United States, that if the country followed God, it would be blessed. If it turned away from God, it would be cursed. And, of course, now we're seeing the results of turning away from God. And one thing is, the alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. You know, the ones that lend to us are the ones who are the head, and we are the tail. And other nations, of course, are lending to us. In fact, 77% of all the world's savings are spent by Americans. We borrow so much from the rest of the world. It's crazy when you think about it. The average Chinese urban worker earns $100 a month and saves 40 to 50 of those dollars and then lends them to Americans who are earning maybe 20 or 30 times as much. And we borrow 77% of all the world's savings. And we've been doing that for some time. So, you know, it was inevitable that a crunch would come, because we just couldn't go on with this situation forever. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. I'm in the Psalms, not Proverbs here. So Proverbs 22 and verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. You know, the ones who have the cash, the ones who do the lending, are the ones who are in charge. And that's basically the way that it is. So we are borrowing from all these nations, and of course they are now able to dictate to us. The nation clearly needs to put its financial house in order. But so do most American citizens, including many people in the church. So today I want to encourage you to put your financial house in order. And I just want to look at two basic problems, two of God's financial laws which have been broken and which have impacted many people in this room and many people in the church. And in fact, they're going to impact all of us, because the whole country is going to struggle for a while as a result of this crisis which is taking place. The basic problem is debt. As a nation, we are indebted. One-third of the money we borrow is actually borrowed from foreign banks, even now from foreign governments. Never used to be that way, but now we're even borrowing from foreign governments. So a part of your mortgage may actually be from, you know, the Chinese government, which is a communist government. It's kind of crazy, but, you know, we've made ourselves very vulnerable by borrowing from these different nations. The federal government leads the way by borrowing all the money needed to fight the war in Iraq, $2.5 billion a day. Now, if all of this is above you and you think it doesn't really mean anything to you, let me point out our children and grandchildren will have to pay this back with interest. So therefore, the standard of living of our children and grandchildren inevitably will be lower than it has been for us, because they will be saddled with all this debt because of the profligacy of our generation. That's really what it comes down to. On a personal level, people are also in debt. Foreclosures are running at their highest since 1932, at the height of the Great Depression. That was the worst year for foreclosures in American history, 1932. In fact, if I remember a documentary I saw on that, I think it was 8 families a day in Detroit were being evicted from their homes during 1932. It was a staggering figure because of the fall in house values, and people couldn't pay their mortgages. Defaults on credit cards are also running the highest for years. The primary cause of debt, if you think about it, is breaking one of God's commandments. Look at Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. And verse 17, Exodus 20 is the Ten Commandments. I know you all know that. And the Tenth Commandment says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's." Now, borrowing money to buy things is coveting. We want something that other people have got. And we want it now. We don't want to save for it, which would be the sensible thing to do. We want it now. And consequently, we have to pay interest on whatever we want now. But we want it now. Now, you know, most people will go without those things. Most people in the world go without those things. I mean, obviously, if a Chinese worker earns $100 a month and saves 50, then he's obviously not buying all the things that we're buying. However, certainly in Ghana, there's an exception to that. Everybody in Ghana, no matter how poor, has a cell phone. It's just unbelievable that people who are earning $30 a month, living on less than a dollar a day, all have cell phones. And I've come to the conclusion that cell phones today give people an identity, gives them a sense of being a part of the world. So everybody has to have one. So the lowliest person has one. Even if they have to miss a couple of meals a day, they'll still have a cell phone because that's more important. So even in poor countries, sometimes, you know, their thinking when it comes to material possessions just isn't right. But ours certainly isn't either because, you know, we want things, so we buy things even if we don't have the cash for it. Whenever we use a credit card, you know, we are basically using somebody else's money, and then we've got to pay it back with interest. So it breaks the 10th commandment of coveting, wanting something that really does not belong to us. That's what coveting is, wanting something that doesn't belong to us. Now, it's doubtful that anybody has thought of credit cards this way. Look at Romans chapter 7 and verse 7. The Apostle Paul writes about how the law enlightened him. Now, I'm sure the Apostle Paul did not have a Visa or a MasterCard. However, the principle here applies. In Romans 7 and verse 7, he says, "Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law." The law, in other words, helps us to understand sin. "For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, 'You shall not covet.'" You know, covet is something in the mind. Coveting is something in the mind. We don't tend to think of it as a sin. It's not like fornication, which is a sin, or adultery, or, you know, or stealing. But coveting is in the mind. But it is that desire to want something, to get something that really should not belong to us because we haven't got the money for it. But we want it anyway. And, of course, all our commercials are constantly telling us things like, "You owe it to yourself. You deserve this. You can have it now." And they put all these things across in ways that entice us. Credit cards have been defined as 45 days to reality. Some go even further. They say interest-free for 6 months, or even interest-free for 12 months. But at the end of that period, 366 days after the big purchase, 12 months interest is added. So you buy an item for $1,000. Let's say your interest rate is 24.9%, let's say 25%. Okay? You buy an item for $1,000, not today because you shouldn't be out shopping today, tomorrow, September the 9th, okay? You buy an item tomorrow, 12 months interest free for $1,000, September the 10th next year, they add $250 to your bill. And then if you just make minimum payments after that, you could actually end up paying $5,000 for an item that would only have been $1,000 had you paid with cash. Now, when I was growing up, we had no choice but to pay cash. There wasn't any other way of doing it. You just had to save the money. So, you know, when I wanted to buy things when I was a teenager, I had to get the money first. There was just no way to do it other than saving up the cash. I'll tell you one thing. It was less stressful than paying all these credit card bills every month. We had to be really careful to make sure we get on top of this and get control of this, because if we are headed for a big financial crunch, which seems increasingly likely but is not inevitable, I think it, you know, things can be turned around. I don't think it's inevitable. But if we are headed for a big financial crunch, then the less debt we have, the better the position we're in to be able to cope with whatever crises do come upon us. So we do need to get that debt down. I've been saying that for years. I've written that in articles for years. Look at Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 28. Thinking about getting control of our financial situation. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. You know, a city broken down without walls, well, anybody can come in and just take everything. And, you know, if we don't get control of our finances, we could lose everything. I think we know we could lose everything anyway for other reasons. But, you know, we're talking here about finances and getting control of our finances. Economics fascinates me. I even subscribe to the Financial Times, which covers world news better than any other paper and covers international financial developments best. Economics impacts geopolitics. The Great Depression of the 1930s led to World War II. Hitler helped Germany come out of the Depression. The German people would have followed him anywhere because he gave them jobs. And that's what people needed more than anything. In 1932, at the height of the Great Depression in the United States, 25% of Americans were unemployed. In the 1893 Depression, 50% of Americans were unemployed. 1893. That was the worst depression in American history. It lasted 5 years. In fact, the election of 1896 had the highest voting turnout in American history. Over 80% of the people voted that year because 50% of the people were unemployed. So everybody suddenly took an interest in politics and wanted to get involved. And so that was a key election in 1896. The Depression really did not end until the Spanish-American War began in 1898. And with war, the economy started moving again. Same thing happened in the 1930s. With World War II, the economy started moving again. Now, the U.S. doesn't have that option anymore because the U.S. is already fighting two wars. You could say even more than that because other conflicts are still going on around the world. And we're borrowing already for those two. There's no way the U.S. could start another war because, you know, the money just would not be there. Now, Diane and I have lived through the collapse of two economies, and, you know, I don't think the United States is going to be as bad as in either of those countries. But the two countries in which we lived through their collapse were Ghana and Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe. In fact, in Rhodesia, we actually left before it collapsed, but, you know, I've been able to see what's been happening since then. When an economy collapses, a great leveling takes place. The richest lose all their wealth. The best paid professions suddenly yield no income. In Russia, for example, in 1998, doctors doubled up as bellboys in Western hotels because the tips they received were greater than the money that they could earn in their profession. In Ghana, we had to barter to get a doctor, a bottle of Scotch whiskey for a malarial treatment for my wife. I still remember that. Still miss the bottle. I'm just kidding. It was worth the trade. Our lawyer found he had no car to drive and nothing to eat. A lawyer. No car to drive and nothing to eat. Those who did best were the farmers, for obvious reasons. No, they were growing the food. People find in an economic crisis, when there's an economic collapse, they find that the only thing they really need is food and water. Everything else, you can forget about it. So, you know, whatever other business you're in, you're not going to do as well. But if you're growing food, then, of course, people have to eat. And other people who did well were people who could fix things, like plumbers and electricians, for example, carpenters. They did well because those are skills which are generally needed. Now, Rhodesia was very much like America. 30 years ago, when we lived there, we bought bread for 5 cents a loaf. Today, or rather yesterday, it was $250,000 a loaf. Yesterday. Because today they've run out of wheat, so there's no more bread for the whole country of 14, 15 million people. When we lived there, everybody was well fed. In fact, that's when I went from being the lanky kid that I was in high school to what I am now, the more mature, more solid individual that I've become. Because Rhodesia was blessed with very good, cheap meat and dairy products and lots of really good food. But today, there's nothing. Now, all of this was the result of debt, overspending on a colossal scale. It is really reckless of governments to overspend. And we've been doing it now for about 35 years. Proverbs 27. You know, the United States for a long time did live within its means after World War II, but then during the Vietnam War, people did not want to pay for the war. So that's when the big borrowing started, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. And today, I think most people in Congress don't have a clue. They don't even begin to comprehend the importance of balancing a budget. Because most people don't. Most people don't. Most people just go get what they want, put it on a credit card. Don't think about balancing their budget. So how can you expect people in Congress to think about it? Proverbs 27, verses 23 and 24. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. You know, a crown, a dynasty, nations rise and fall. And that's true, of course, with republics, too. In fact, republics don't generally last very long. The United States has lasted longer than any other republic in history. The Financial Times has had some interesting correspondence the last few weeks by Americans, not Europeans, but Americans, writing in because, you know, they had an article which I missed when I was in Ghana. But the article was comparing the United States to the Roman Republic, which collapsed. And they were looking at the analogies and asking if the United States could go the same way. And some of the correspondence was interesting because basically it was two things that brought about the collapse of the Roman Republic. One was the state of the nation's finances. And the other one, which they highlighted, is immigration. Immigration was out of control. You see the analogies? And, you know, one article highlighted another factor, and that is the... you know, the fact that we're fighting all these conflicts and borrowing the money to fight them. So there are certain analogies there. So I think we can see some of these things when we look back at history and see what's happening as well. But all we can do is take care of ourselves. We can't change the nation. But on a personal level, we need to exercise self-control to stay out of debt. Look at Proverbs 21 and verse 17. Proverbs 21 and verse 17. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. So, you know, if somebody is a big consumer, just, you know, likes everything and spends all his money on all the pleasures of life, you know, eventually it's going to catch up with him. And we've done that as a nation. We've also done that as individuals. As individual citizens, just spent too much. If we want something, we go get it. I think we've all got our weaknesses. With different people, it's different things. You know, some people like to have the latest technology. So as soon as that, what was it, the iPod came out a few weeks ago, you had people standing outside the store for 24 hours or 36 hours waiting to buy the latest one. And, you know, that would have been put on a credit card. They might not have had the money for it. I mean, some people do pay their credit cards off each month without interest, which is good. But most people don't. And, you know, but some people just have to have the latest technology or the latest car. It's another thing that, you know, people have to have. and it gets them into debt. Now let's look at another one of God's financial laws that has been broken individually and collectively on a national scale. Malachi chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. So here is a condemnation of Judah in ancient times because it was not tithing. They were not practicing tithing. Now, if you think about it, not tithing is stealing. In fact, it says that here. You have robbed me. In what way have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. You were cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me. You know, to rob somebody is to steal. Look at Exodus chapter 20 again. You know, the world's problems, America's problems, our individual problems, are the result of breaking God's laws, which is why God gives us his laws, to protect us from that. If we keep his laws, then, you know, we will live happy and contented lives and prosperous lives. Exodus 20 and verse 15 says, you shall not steal. Not tithing is stealing. But also, it breaks the first, second, and tenth commandments, if you think about it. The first commandment, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. That's the first commandment. Now, you know, if we put all the physical things first before God, if we've got to have those things, if we keep on charging things, and then we don't have the money to give God the tithe, which is his, it's not even ours, then, you know, we're breaking the first commandment. We do not put God first in our lives. We put all those physical things first. The second commandment says you shall not make for yourself a carved image. Well, again, you know, some of those physical things we buy, you know, are like idols that we bow down to. You know, the second commandment tells us not to bow down to them. In verse 5, you should not bow down to them nor serve them. But I think a lot of people do. They, you know, they worship the physical things. And those are more important. Then, of course, the 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's house in verse 17. At the end of the verse, it says, nor anything that is your neighbor's. So we're actually breaking four commandments when we don't tithe. So it is a great sin. Look at Matthew chapter 6. It would be wrong of me to say that God will not bless people who don't tithe, because the world is full of very wealthy people who don't tithe. However, God is not working with them. You know, he is working with us. And sometimes when people get themselves in a financial bind, it's because they've broken God's law in this particular area. There's one thing that tithing does, and that is it makes you plan your finances. It makes you budget. And therefore, you bring everything under control. And by budgeting, you realize you only have so much money for this, so much money for that. And you have to limit your spending. So it has a very beneficial effect by encouraging self-discipline, which, again, you know, a lot of people do have a problem with, particularly when it comes to their finances. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19 says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know, where your treasure is, where, you know, what your focus is. If your focus is on money, and, you know, you want to accumulate as much as possible, then, you know, you're not going to be as spiritual as you should be. That's where your heart's going to be, rather than with God. So it's important for us to understand the importance of tithing applicable to this particular passage. The need for us to tithe, to show that we recognize that everything does come from God, and that God expects us to give that first tenth back to him. And, of course, it also shows our concern for others in the world because we want to be involved in preaching the gospel to the peoples around the world. One of the things you'll see with the speeches by the young guys afterwards is that the money which is given in this country, for example, does help a lot of people around the world. And Ghana is the area that I'm responsible for, but certainly we could not do anything in Ghana without the generosity of people in the United States. And I think this is one thing that you see so clearly when you go, and what a difference a little bit of money makes. I mean, $1 spent in Ghana goes a lot further than $1 spent in the United States does. We can do a lot more in that part of the world. And also we see much greater growth in some of those areas of the world, in Africa especially. Africa is the only continent where the number of people becoming Christians of all denominations is increasing. In every other continent, it's decreasing, including in North America. But in West Africa and the whole of Africa, in fact, it's increasing. And the money which is donated here certainly helps us to serve the people in those different countries. In verse 33 of Matthew 6, the words are added, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all the other things shall be added to you." So, our focus should be primarily on God, upon his kingdom, upon those things that we heard about earlier are going to come upon this world in the years to come, and that are going to lead to his kingdom. We need to be focused on that and preparing for that. Look at Matthew chapter 22 as well. I haven't spoken on this subject of tithing for many years, but I see as people get themselves into a financial mess, quite often this is a common denominator, that people have compromised in this particular area. Sometimes I think when it comes to priorities, it's hard for me to understand things. I remember when my daughter sold her car. Young guy who bought the car, his grandfather, I think, paid for the car itself but wouldn't pay for the stereo. He objected to all the music, So the kid promised to pay my daughter back. I think it was $400 that she wanted for the stereo system that was in there. And he paid the first $100 and never did pay the other $300. And whenever she called him or I spoke to him, he would say things like, I can't do it this month because my cell phone bill is over $800. I remember this, okay? Over $800? I said, how can you have a cell phone bill of over $800? And his response was, my girlfriend and I talk every day on the phone. As if that explains why you would spend over $800 on your cell phone, And obviously had his priorities were that to have long conversations each day with his girlfriend was far more important than paying off his debts, which, of course, is a very, very immature and very irresponsible. If we all conducted ourselves that way, nobody could trust anybody. But sometimes priorities just, blow my mind. And I've heard other things, similar things from other people that, there are certain things they've just got to have no matter what. And those are priorities. And you get people who are in financial problems, but they can't get rid of HBO. They can't even, we've got rid of cable. And I know a few others here who don't have cable TV. We got rid of it partly to save money, but partly because, it's just, where's the time to watch anything on it? And, it's less stressful when you don't know what's on anyway. You're not trying to watch stuff. So, it saves you a lot of time. But the thing is, what are your priorities? And you have to bring your spending down to what you can afford, which means some things may have to go. Proverbs 22, again, this passage just, again, highlights the fact that where our priorities should be. Matthew 22, did I say Proverbs? Well, Matthew 22 is what I meant. Okay? You should know what I meant. Matthew 22, verse 35. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. You know, these are the priorities. This is what Christ told us to have as our priorities. Love toward God and love toward our fellow man. When you think about it, tithing is applicable to both. You know, we tithe to God, and the money we give to God, to God's church, is then used to preach the gospel to our fellow man. And, you know, people then have their minds opened by God as they read the literature and, you know, as they respond to his calling. So, you know, everybody benefits. God, you know, the people that are turning to God certainly benefit from that. The problem of debt and not tithing certainly go together. How much interest are you paying out, for example? You look at how much interest you pay each month on credit cards and charge cards and car loans. Now, I'm excluding here your mortgage because, you know, there's really no way to buy a house without a mortgage unless you're extremely wealthy. You know, it's likely that you're paying out well over 10% in interest. And this is just money which is really down the drain. It really is. You know, you need to avoid as much interest as possible, even if it's tax deductible, because it's still money down the drain. And, you know, as you know, I mean, Muslims, for example, do not allow interest. Their countries do not allow interest. And now you've got more and more Muslim banks, and they're growing. They even operate in the United States now because interest is not allowed in the Quran. And, you know, that is, you know, the way forward in some places, I guess. I'm not advocating that as such because banks obviously have to make their money as well. But it's kind of interesting that, you know, they're moving in to places where people are overburdened by the interest that they've been paying out. But, you know, you have to ask yourself if you've been responsible, if you're paying out a lot of interest and you're having difficulty tithing, maybe there's a connection there too. The debt burden often leads people to compromise when tithing. You know, one thing that I should mention here, and it's been highlighted this week in the Financial Times and also on the BBC, was a report from, I think it was from the UN, it might have been the Food and Agricultural Program of the United Nations, but that is what's known as food inflation. There are big increases in the price of food taking place around the world, and that is starting to impact people in the U.S. as well. And those of you who do the grocery shopping know that a lot of food prices have gone up by 20-25% over the past 2 or 3 months. Well, that is going to go, you know, food is going to go up even more because it's due to a number of factors. One is the weather is a factor, which has reduced food supplies in different countries. It's reduced the growth in the amount of food. But another is that India and China, with increasing affluence, are buying more food, as a result of which, again, is pushing up the price of food. Then a third factor is that corn, which is used to feed cattle and other animals, so therefore it affects the price of meat, corn has gone up quite a lot because of the biofuels that are being developed to compensate for the fact that, you know, the world oil supply is more at risk. So, you know, food is going to become more expensive. So we need to be aware that that's likely to follow. And like I said, we may not be able to influence the nation's leaders to put right the country's finances, but we can certainly do that in our own lives. You know, we can quit overspending and stop compromising with God's law on tithing. So when we look at the problems which are taking place at this time, you know, the best advice that I could give certainly is to try and get yourself out of debt as much as possible. You may not be able to do anything about your mortgage, but you should be able to at least stay out, you know, stop accumulating any more debt, because the more debt you have, the worse your position will be if you lose your job, for example, through this recession, which may turn into a depression. I asked my wife this morning to pull off the internet a definition of recession and depression so you understand the difference. And these are the definitions. A recession is a period of general economic decline, specifically a decline in gross domestic product for 2 or more consecutive quarters. So if the U.S. economy goes backwards for two quarters, then we are in a recession. And the predictions are that we will be in a recession in a few months. A depression is a severe or long recession. That is a depression, so something that goes on for a long period of time. The depression, which started in 1929, really lasted right up until the late 1930s, until World War II started, and countries in Europe needed supplies from the U.S., and that kind of got American industry moving again. Now, what Ghana and Zimbabwe have gone through is an economic collapse, which is even worse than a depression, because that's when absolutely everything collapses, and that's a devastating breakdown of an economy. Hopefully, we're not going to see that. But I think one thing we do need to realize is that prophetically, we have to move from a U.S.-dominated global economy to a euro-dominated dominated global economy. And I think that's what we're going through now. We're kind of going through the birth pangs of that, the painful transition, and we've been going through it really for the last year or two, but we're still going through it, and it's not over yet. But, you know, it is interesting. The dollar keeps going down. The euro keeps going up. The Europeans have done well in many respects. The Germans are now the world's biggest producers of goods. Not the U.S. The Germans sell more overseas, I should say. So that the German products are more in demand than American products are, and we see a change taking place there. And that is part of what is going on now. Like the man said on Wall Street, you know, the world is waking up to the fact that it can live without the United States, and so they're just not willing to lend to us anymore, and that is the result. The result is the credit crunch, the credit squeeze, and it's going to be harder to borrow money and more expensive to borrow money. So keep these things in mind. I'm simply trying to help people to understand what's happening and to encourage you all to put your financial house in order, and that includes getting out of debt and making sure that you are tithing and working with God, not against God, but working with God, and trying to resolve your financial problems and difficulties, and trying to put them right.